Welcome to the Wanting It More podcast. I am your host, Jana Dentonhouse, and it's an absolute delight to have you here. I'm a marriage and intimacy educator, as well as a creator of the Wanting It More program, which has helped thousands of women who are married to men want and enjoy it more in the bedroom. You know, having low desire was something that I personally struggled with for years in my marriage, so I absolutely get it all. You are not alone. Just a heads up, I use all the words in this podcast, so if you've got little ears around or you're in a public setting, you may want to pop in some earbuds. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome back to the podcast. It's great to have you here. Today's conversation is a real wild card. We're not quite sure where it's going to go. And that's the exciting part of just two people hanging out and having a chat. I am thrilled by our guest today. Nancy just became a favorite in the round of the program. I will just say, it was a joy to speak and have her little box on Zoom light up with her beautiful expressions and smiles and radiance. So I'm kind of bummed out for this episode that we don't have video, but I'm sure you'll hear it come out well, I don't want to put any pressure, Nancy, on you. So let's just get going. Do you want to give us a little introduction about yourself?
I'm 71 years old, which is hard for me to believe. And I've been with my partner for 22 years. This is my third long-term relationship. The first one was 9 years and I had my son. And the second one was 14 years. And I live in British Columbia.
Me too. Aren't we lucky?
Yes, we are.
Can I ask you, do you feel comfortable sharing a little bit about what it's been like to be in three long-term relationships? Because a lot of us have only been in one. I mean, I know I have. Is that a head nod? Is that a yes? Okay. I always want to ask permission. Yeah. Well, so what's it like to have three men, I'm presuming, that you've been with, and three personalities, three childhood histories, three, I'm guessing, unique challenges with all of them? Yeah. I mean, I don't have a more specific question. I'm just curious.
Okay. Well, my first relationships, long-term relationships, started when I was probably 22 or 23. And it was with a guy who I grew up in the States. I only moved up to Canada when I was 10. And so he had actually lived in the same suburb I did in Canada, but then he moved down to the States. And, you know, we seemed to get along really well. We had a lot of laughs. But sex became a problem. And in that relationship, I joined a group for women who'd been sexually abused. And so that was the first time I was really talking about it. And I just remember coming home from one of the sessions and saying to my partner, you know, just letting you know that if we're having sex and I decide, you know, something comes up for me and I decide I don't want to continue, I just want to give you a heads up. And his reaction was like, well, what am I going to do? Like, what am I going to do with my erection? And that was just so striking. Anyway, he was kind of a hard person to deal with because he had very rigid ideas, not conservative ideas, just rigid ideas that he'd come up with. And I had gotten pregnant early on in our relationship. And then he decided to move back to the States. And I just couldn't face, I knew I couldn't raise a child on my own at that point. So I had an abortion. And then we did get back together. And so it was probably about 7 years later that I was having issues with birth control. I had an IUD And it was just sort of coming out that they weren't very healthy for you. And my partner agreed that I should stop having it. So I had it taken out, and I assumed we would use condoms and spermicide, but no, he didn't like that. So I thought, okay, I had been working in this office and seen the other women there, getting married, having kids. And I had decided that, I would like to have a kid. So when he said he didn't like condoms, I just thought, okay, I leave birth control up to you. And so, of course, I became instantly pregnant. And I was really happy to be pregnant. But when I told him, he was shocked that I wasn't going to have another abortion. And he was, he was there for the birth, but he didn't really participate a lot in the child rearing. And but I was really happy through my pregnancy. I felt really good. It was kind of the first time I had been able to take care of, feel like it was good to take care of myself. And I loved, my baby. But it just became too hard to live with him. He was, the way we did our money back then was we each just put the same amount into a joint account. But when I became pregnant, and had my child, I went on EI, and EI ran out eventually. And I tried going to work. It was really hard. And he, so I wasn't able to put money in. And he said, "Well, you can owe me the money."
Oh gosh.
And I thought, this is like, oh, and then he went and had my name taken off our joint account. I don't know how the bank agreed to that. So at that point, I thought, I've got to leave or I'm going to murder him. So I did the thing of him, I got put a deposit on an apartment really close because I wanted him to have every chance to be a good father. And I did the thing where he went to work. I got a van. One of my friends came. One friend came and picked up the baby and took him to her house. And my friend and I packed up all my stuff and left. And really, he didn't see the baby that often. And he was just difficult to deal with. But we got a separation right away, and I did get some child care payments. So that was that.
Did you end up going back to work then?
No. What did I do? I guess I stayed on EI.
Right.
I'm not sure how that.
I mean, I'm asking you to go way
Oh,
back, so
no.
you're doing
Sorry, I
great.
didn't go on EI. I went on welfare. And that was really hard. And that was really hard on how I felt about myself. Really, it's a different world when you're on welfare. And so right at the same time that I left him, I started working with an art therapist. And she had been the leader in the sexual abuse group that I was in. And she was really wonderful. So I did a lot of healing through that. And she had suggested that I do a course. And I figured out what course I wanted to do. It was a sculpture course. And I did that, and I was able to do sculptures that related to my experience. And I really liked it because I could just, without being intellectual or anything, I could just shape clay or whatever I was working in into a shape that, and then cast it. So it was like my feelings suddenly had all this weight in the stone or the cement or the plaster or whatever it was. So that was also really healing. So about a year after I left my first partner, I met my second partner. And we just, you know, we each had our own place for the first 2 years. But he was kind of more in tune with me intellectually, and he was, you know, warm and loving. And so eventually, so after a couple of years, I moved into his place. And by that time, my son was 3. And I told that partner that, you know, if I'm going to live with you, my son, we just take care of my son as though we're both the parents. It's not me by myself and you helping out. And he was really great about that. I started working a shift work job that I really loved. And so he was there, and, you know, he was doing a 9-to-5 job so he could look after my son, and he would take him to the pond and throw breadcrumbs at the ducks and all that kind of stuff. So that part was really great. But he also had issues with feelings, and he would stonewall me, and I would get really frustrated. Like, we couldn't seem to work things out together. Even though I kind of felt like, well, I'm going to be with him forever. But eventually, I just decided this just isn't working for anybody. And my son was about 15 or 16 then. And so we had a very amicable split up. And he moved to another apartment in the same complex. And we actually shared our car, which was super helpful, and it just worked out beautifully.
That's incredible.
Yes, it just was wonderful. So then I was on my own for about 2 years, and that was fine. I enjoyed that. And then my sister lived in Boston at the time. And so I would fly back with my son, you know, once or twice a year for a family visit. And then he was probably 16 by then. So I actually flew back by myself, which I hadn't done before. And I sat next to a guy who just, you know, we just got talking, and he just blew my mind, and I got really excited about him. And so I saw him a few times when I was visiting my sister. And I just had this idea that, you know, this was going to go somewhere. I was just so excited about him. We had the same interests, or a lot of the same interests. But he wasn't interested in a long-term relationship. So that was a sad realization. But I had this longing now. So, and one of my friends at work had joined Lava Life, which was an online meetup place. And I saw how she managed it safely. And so I started doing that too. And I had a few coffee dates with people, and they were okay, but, you know, definitely no sparks, no interest. And I kind of gave up on Lava Life. I just ignored it for a couple months. And then I went on at some point and realized that, you know, one of the guys that had contacted me looked interesting. And so I sent him a response. And then it was about a month before he contacted me, because he was going to, he was taking some university courses and busy. So we hit it off right away. He's a real sweetie pie. And so that was the start of that relationship. And I didn't have any hesitation in, like, totally committing myself to him. He has a very feminine side. He's very soft. But he's also, like, he's also an amazing business guy. He's had a, he had a really successful business, and he was having plans for the future. So after we'd been together for, oh, we bought a house together, and then he started a business where I'm living now. And we just, I decided I'd move up there, obviously, because the business was located there. It wasn't possible to move it around. So it happened that I worked for the provincial government. I didn't start working with them till I was 35. So when I was 55, I had my 20 years so I could get a pension. And I just had it with work. There was, there were things I loved about it, but there were things that were just really, like, personnel-wise, just kind of sick. So I retired and moved up here. And then I started doing the books for my husband. That was my job for the next 12 years. And I was somewhat involved in the business. So, and now we've been together 22 years. And what I realized not too long after I moved up here, sex became a problem. And I would just dread going to bed at night because I felt like I had to fend him off all the time. And I had to do it. I mean, I wasn't always nice about it because I have a temper that I will haul out when it's needed.
That is so hard to believe.
No, really. I mean,
Really?
absolutely.
Wow.
Yes. And I'm very articulate and I've really thought about my issues. And I, I have to stand up for myself. But what I didn't pick up on for a long time, like probably another 5 years, was that I was constantly being interrupted by him. I couldn't get two sentences out. And if I wanted, so it kind of, it did shut me down. I didn't chit chat as much. And if I wanted to talk, he just kind of glazed over. And we had a lot, we both like making things. Metal, wood, sewing for me. And we would try to do these big projects together because we did a lot of renovations on the house and the property. And there were, it was just constant arguments. And so it just got worse and worse. And then I would spend, when I was upset, I would Google things that I thought would help me make sense of the situation. And one of the things I ran across was a guy, I can't remember his name, sadly, because he's great. And he talked about invalidation. Like, he started out his the podcast I listened to with, my wife and I would sit down to a perfectly fine dinner, and then she would ruin it by complaining. And he had been, he got divorced. So I remember us listening to that podcast when we were doing a car trip. And so then we, so we worked a lot with invalidation and trying to not do that. But I was really, really frustrated. And we were seeing a marriage counselor, and I would just say over and over again, I feel invisible. I feel like he doesn't see me at all. And like nothing I said could make a difference. And so there was, and we had gotten into that very negative thing where we each had a negative story about each other and we just couldn't seem to get out of it. And, but I kept reading stuff and I kept working on it. And it was really hard. And we both read a book by David Burns called Feeling Good Together. And it's a wonderful book. And he has a little formula, kind of like the AVR, the acknowledge, validate, and what's the third one? Acknowledge, validate,
Reassure.
and reassure. Yes. His thing, he focused on acknowledging and validating. And you could see that it was amazing, but it's really hard to do. He said he had a group of counselors to practice counseling on each other. And oh no, one of them had to super criticize the other. And the one that got criticized just couldn't do the acknowledging and validating, even though he's a professional counselor. And but I found that it's really hard to do in those situations. And I was just so frustrated and angry. My whole body was upset. I had had heart failure a few years before. That was due to it wasn't congestive heart failure. It was a Takotsubo event, which is where your heart gets a shock and one of your chambers kind of blows up. It doesn't explode, but it just becomes big and loose, and you just can't pump blood. So, and I had, and you can get over that, and I did get over it. But I had, that gave me a sense of when the stress was really getting to be too much for my body. So during this time, when you're really upset, I would take lorazepam, which I think is Ativan, because I was just distraught. I just was distraught all the time. And, we still kept working on stuff, and we were still seeing the counselor, but she retired, which was fine. I mean, her suggestion to deal with the sex problem was the usual, schedule it. And, that just did nothing for me. It did nothing for me. And, thinking about it now, it just makes me realize how ingrained the idea is that women have to provide sex for men. So anyway, so last summer, I finally said to him, I give up. We can start making plans to separate. And that was good. It was a shock for him, but it was good for me because I made some really concrete plans about how I would live my life after, which I hadn't done before. And so that made me feel really good because I had made some decisions. And it would work. It would work for me because I just dreaded the idea of being poor and living in some place that was unpleasant. But I knew I could find a place that was decent and, be happy about my life. And I don't have a problem living by myself. I like having alone time. I have a lot of social anxiety with people unless I know them really well. Anyway, so then I don't remember exactly how it happened, but it was just a few days later that we decided, okay, we'll give it another go. And things were getting better between us, like the working on the invalidation. Was helping, but I would still get really frustrated because I wasn't being heard. It's just the weirdest feeling to say words and assume that, they're words, the other person is listening, but he just didn't hear them at all. Like he just had these very fixed ideas about how things were, and he didn't know he had these fixed ideas. And so just unbelievably frustrating. So, of course, I would yell because I was in pain. I was just in terrible pain. And then, but at the same time, we did have a strong relationship. It was just sex that was a problem. That we do things together that we like. But this was just such a huge problem. And he would be, really sad and feel rejected. And I knew that even if I did have sex, it didn't solve the problem. Like the next day it would be back again, because I knew that sex wasn't the solution. That it wouldn't give him what he thought it would give him, if I can make that judgment. And so then in January, when he started listening to your podcasts, I knew he was kind of excited about it. And he was just, what do you call it? He binged on your podcasts. And he came to me and said, "I can't believe that I'm hearing so many women saying exactly what you were saying." He was just blown away. And he was also really excited to hear what women had to say all of a sudden. He was just really excited about it. And he suggested we do the course. And at first, well, I was, so impressed with his reaction. But at the same time, I thought, is this just going to be another way to make me have sex with him? But we did it. And, what you had to say, Jana, was just really wonderful about safety. I knew for years I hadn't felt safe, and I said that to him. I don't feel safe because you don't listen to me. But I hadn't, like, it didn't occur to me that, I felt like I had no backing. I'm just one woman trying to talk to one guy, and he wasn't listening to me. So it was, I had no ground to stand on to make these arguments with him, because I wasn't given ground. I mean, if I'd been given any ground, I would have been there. So dealing with safety and hearing you say you don't ever have to have sex again if you don't want to. And so that was like instantly helpful. And my partner was totally on board, which was amazing. And the self-compassion was really great. And the reset was great, just saying, "No sex for 4 weeks." But the and you know, all your videos were fantastic. Just a totally different perspective than what I had seen from anywhere else. And also, I had really underestimated the media influence on our attitudes. Like it's just mind-blowing to think that, they say there is this one way to have sex, and this is the way it's supposed to be, and that's that. And it's so sterile and bleak. if you're thinking that way. But the other part that I think is really necessary is the Zoom calls with all the women. Like to see all the women, we all felt the same way. It was just amazing and just so heartening. And it just normalized the way I was feeling. Yeah, that was really powerful. And just as an aside, when I was growing up, you know, I was a feminist from the time I was 19 or 20. And so I was around when women started to have consciousness raising groups where they would get together and talk about their lives and raise their consciousness about the world they lived in and what they were up against. And I feel like this program was like that as well. It was just, I can't even express how powerful it was. And then being able to have discussions and, you know, text discussions as well. Yeah, super powerful. So things, you know, are better for us. I still have a physical reaction to not wanting to touch my husband, other than, you know, when we cuddle or have a hug. And I think that will go away. And I'm actually finding, I don't know if I can say this to the public, but I'm actually finding, so the thing about the safety is that it gives you space. That's what I was feeling before. It's like, you know, having someone crowd you up against you, you can't think straight. They're acting like you're not a person. It's just horrible. So having safety meant that I had space to feel who I was and what I wanted, which totally wasn't there before. So I found that as I have space, I do have some feelings of arousal, which I am just going to ignore for now. I mean, I'll notice them and all, but I'm not acting on them. But I knew all the time that if he would give me space, this would happen. And I kept saying to him, give me space. That's all I want, some space. But his way of giving me space was to zip his lips and resent me. And I know that. I know he's doing that. That's not space. he really didn't get it. And during the course of the program, you know, I found out things like he thought that sex was as good for me as it was good for him, and he couldn't understand why I didn't want to have sex. He didn't even question that. And I thought, well, I mean, there's many reasons to know that there's no way I could have dealt with this on my own. Just no way. So now we have an exploration date once a week. We've just had a couple so far. And they're very low key. I just, you know, he gets the dogs out and feeds them, and we have something to nibble on and some music, and we just talk. And really, I've always loved just talking with him about, you know, his past and how we feel and all that. And so to me, that's the intimacy for me. And he's really enjoying it, and he's totally on board. And now he says, it's my job. My only job with you is to make you feel safe. That's my job. And I love whatever we do on our XDs, our exploration dates, I'm happy with. So yeah, major transformation.
Oh, when you said consciousness raising groups, oh my heart. That is just, oh wow. I I mean, you just shared so many things. It was such a joy to listen to all of that. I just want you to keep talking, but when you said that piece, I mean.
Well, that's what it is. Instead of just each woman on her own suffering and trying to deal with the guy, you get together and you realize, well, I'm not alone. There's, everyone feels like this. Every woman feels like this. Yeah.
And I'm going through a sort of a separate challenge in my life right now, and so I actually gathered some women every Thursday. So today's a Thursday, and we're meeting in my home, drinking tea, just being together. And you've just put a name to what it is that I do in the world, which is just
Yeah.
so validating. Gosh, thank you for sharing your story. That was incredible to hear the courage that you've had in your life. It takes tremendous courage to separate from somebody that you've grown to rely on financially, emotionally, and to get to the place where you're just done and you know it, and you take the steps and you potentially face repercussions and poverty and
Yeah.
suffering,
Yeah.
real suffering. And that is where women are right now in the, still in the world,
Yeah.
unfortunately. So much financial insecurity. And wow, I am so glad you found the program. And also, you have much more of a story to come, right? We
Yes.
don't know what's
Absolutely.
next.
Yes.
Wow. Well, I'm feeling just like full and complete. Was there anything else that you would like to share with the listeners?
No, I think that's about it.
It was a absolute joy to spend this time with you, and I could listen to you talk forever. That was just so calming, and you mentioned you're a feminist, and gosh, we have so much work to do, Nancy.
Yes.
We have so much work to do. And I think of that first wave of feminism that came through, and more about that than I do, but from my perspective, it was kind of like, let's have the same rights almost. Like, would you
Well,
say?
I don't think we could picture what it would look like. But still, it was wonderful. I remember I subscribed to Ms. Magazine as soon as it came out, and I remember the first time I read an article about sexual harassment in the workplace. And there was no word for that back then. It did not exist. You couldn't even think about it because there was no word for it. So it was important, definitely. But I think it's just really tough with men. It's just really tough. And I don't know how it's ever going to change on a bigger scale.
Yeah, sometimes I say, I'm in a unique position to help men change because of the motivation of sex. And, that's a complicated place for me to be in, knowing that. But hey, I'll take what I can get if I can impact, and change the mindset a little bit, then that's where I'll go, and I'll stay here for as long as it works.
Well, I listened to one of the podcasts where some people in the final couples Zoom call spoke about what the program did for them. And it's really hearing to hear all the guys talk about, just healing to hear them get it. And yeah.
It really is. I mean, when you take, I was going to say one couple at a time, but the truth is, the men need to change. And I think the women are so ready. They're so ready. They're so willing. They've been working for years. They know what it's like to self-reflect. They know what it's like to get therapy and read the books and the blogs and the podcasts. They know all that. And you got to have two willing partners to affect change. And so really that's been such a huge well, we've just completed the full men's program, and now we're moving into the program to be a couples program fully now. But it took me a while to get to that place where I could have the courage to be honest. You know, we're so used to having the victims of oppression really do the work, whether that's minority groups, racial groups, whether that's gendered groups, whether that's folks who have different, you know, sort of minority sexual orientations. Like, they have to do the fighting, they have to do the speaking, and we're not going to get anywhere that way because we're tired. We're tired. We've been fighting for so long, and it's really hard to, you know, to affect change that way. So yeah, it's going to take in this particular instance, when we're looking at the inequality of men and women, it's going to take the men. Yeah. Just like with white supremacy, it's going to take us white folks to finally, you know, wake up and make some change and not be okay with other people suffering while we benefit from the system. So we all got our work to do. Thank you, Nancy, again.
You're
It
welcome. It
was
was
a
a
joy.
pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you everyone to listening. I hope you I am positive you were as delighted with Nancy's story as I was, and I'll talk to you in the next one. Bye for now. If you've enjoyed this episode, I have a favor to ask of you. It's really hard to get the word out about a podcast about sex. What would really, really help is if you would leave a rating and a review. And I know that you get asked this all the time in different podcasts, but please, I beg you, it would really, really help so that more women who need this message will hear it. All you have to do is go into your Apple Podcast app. It's the purple icon. And if you go to the podcast page where it shows my face and has a little button that says latest episodes, if you scroll down past the episodes and you get to a section called ratings and reviews, there's a little purple writing thing that says write a review. If you click on that, it will ask you to give it a 5 stars. Actually, you can put any stars, but 5 is what I would love. And put a title and then write your review. Thank you so much for supporting this little venture here. And I really am so grateful. If you are curious about wanting it more and how this program could help you want and enjoy sex more with your husband, and you feel like it may be a great next step for you, you can go to janetdentonhouse.com/wantingitmore to sign up for the wait list, to learn more, to see when we're running our next round. All right, that's it. I'll see you next one.